Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're watching me on the telly. See me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me protesting.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Treisman, who's a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia. He is the author of two previous acclaimed books on Russia, the latest of which is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Treisman.
Thank you.
And Russia, of course, have given asylum to Edward Snowden for a whole year. And this has upset the White House. And I'm wondering whether, if the White House had been using, as some rumors have suggested, the leverage of threatening to cancel President Obama's trip to meet with Putin in Moscow after the St. Petersburg G20 summit in early September, if those rumors are true, that leverage was being used, threatening to cancel the presidential visit, would this mean then that giving asylum to Snowden means that Putin has decided, in effect, to call it off?
No, I think Putin and the Russians in general still hope that Obama will come to the G20 summit and will meet personally with Putin. We'll have to wait and see if that's the case, but there are certainly strong U.S. interests in keeping the diplomacy going. But I think on the U.S. side, although clearly both the White House and Capitol Hill wanted to make it absolutely evident to Putin and the Russians that we care very much about getting Snowden back. At the same time, I think there's a certain amount of realism. People understood that it would be very difficult for Putin to simply hand him over, that there were not many intermediate options that could be dreamed up. And so in the end, it was unlikely that simply putting pressure and threatening to cancel U.S. participation in the summit would achieve that end.
And previously, Putin had said about Snowden is that we will have him here in Russia as long as he doesn't embarrass our partners, the Americans. And then Putin added, as strange as that may seem coming from my lips. But just yesterday, the UK Guardian published some more leaks from Snowden. So, again, I'm just looking at coincidence here. Did the leaks happened before asylum was finally granted? Will that mean that the leaks will stop happening?
Well, I think the Guardian made clear that the information which was leaked was not provided by Snowden now. It had been provided by Snowden to the Guardian some time ago. And so I think the position they're taking is that it was the Guardian's decision to publish them now and that Snowden didn't control that. We'll have to wait and see if that affects the Russians' attitude towards Snowden, or maybe we'll never know that. But so far, at least, it certainly didn't prevent the asylum issue. I mean, I think Putin, he didn't seek this. This whole issue. He didn't invite Snowden to come to Moscow, and he would much rather that it had never happened, and at this point that it could be just resolved somehow and people would forget about it. Now, he doesn't want to simply hand the guy over to the U.S. in these circumstances because that makes him look subservient, but I don't think he really wants to draw out the issue and focus attention much more on it. So I think it was probably the Guardian's decision that they should get this material out there at this point. I don't even know whether Snowden has any communications with the Guardian at this point. It may be very difficult for him to communicate from where he's probably being guarded quite closely by Putin's agents.
So what then explains the political hyperbole of people like Senator Schumer said today that Russia has stabbed us in the back?
Well, I think everybody's very upset. Of course, it's a huge embarrassment. And yet once again, Russia seems to be taking an anti-American position. There's been a whole series of rhetorical outbursts on the part of Russians, mostly in the Duma, in the parliament, but also some coming from the Kremlin, angry statements about the U.S., and there have been these various pieces of legislation, such as the ban on U.S. Families adopting Russian orphans, which was put in place last December. So there's a sense that Russia is in a very anti-American frame of mind, and that this all fits in. I think that when one looks closer, one distinguishes that there are some kinds of anti-American and anti-American rhetoric that Putin is using for domestic political purposes, and then there's the actual relationship between Russia and the U.S., and there has been continued cooperation on various issues, obviously not including the orphans, but on various issues such as the transport of NATO material over Russia and using the Ulyanovsk transit hub and so on. So even as Russian officials have been using anti-Americanism to try and drum up support for Putin, they have continued to cooperate on various practical matters.
And the extraction of all that heavy military equipment from Afghanistan is no small matter. And there's no indication that the Russians are going to pull the plug on that.
I haven't seen any hint that anything would change in that. I think this is something very important for the American government, obviously, through 2014, when that's supposed to be completed. There are other things. This planned peace conference in Geneva to try and work on the Syrian problem that would be jointly hosted by the U.S. and the Russians. We don't quite know where we are with that, but I think talks continue over that. And on many other international issues, I think the U.S. recognizes, Obama recognizes, that we need to negotiate with the Russians and try and find areas of joint interests. So it's a huge embarrassment, a huge frustration, but it's something that happened rather than something that the Russians deliberately did to try to undermine the relationship with the U.S. at this point.
So Snowden's statements essentially are praising Putin and thanking the Russians and condemning the Americans, or the American government, I should say, for their treatment of him. This whole thing has gotten quite topsy-turvy in terms of the notion that this Edward Snowden was originally a whistleblower who was trying to inform the American people about government intrusion on their civil liberties with massive spying, all of which has certainly gotten the attention of the American people. There was an extremely close vote in the Congress to stop this program. But at the same time, he has ended up in the hands of the Chinese and now in the hands of the Russians, presumably with a lot of this information still in his possession, or more information, I should say, stuff that we haven't heard yet, in his possession. And he's praising Russia and condemning the United States. And, of course, we all know that Russia doesn't have a particularly sterling record on human rights and their treatment of their own people, particularly in terms of media freedom and government intrusion on communications. So how does it strike you in terms of a paradoxical kind of story?
Well, it's quite ironic, isn't it, that Putin, who's never shown a soft spot for whistleblowers and civil libertarians, has now become the hero of this person who's trying to expose the violations against human rights in the U.S. So human rights activists have to go and rely on the kindness of strangers and dictatorial regimes these days, I guess, with Cuba also being a possible endpoint for Snowden. So, yeah, it's completely topsy-turvy, as you say. I can't imagine that if Snowden remains in Russia, he's going to have a very, very fulfilling future life there. That's the sort of crazy situation that we're in.
Well, he's already been offered a job from Russia's social networking site, their equivalent of Facebook, Vi Contacti. So,
yeah. Well, he has computer skills. I'm sure he can put them to use. But I imagine also that the FSB is going to be watching him closely, and that Putin, as he said, will not allow Snowden to make comments or leak information that will damage our American partners, as Putin said. So I don't know how free he will be. We'll just have to wait and see if that's how it ends up. But I think, meanwhile, the Russians will probably continue to try to find some other arrangement whereby Snowden can end up somewhere else, such as in a Latin American country. I should say one other thing is probably that for Snowden to remain in Russia is probably preferable from the point of view of the White House to having him in Ecuador or Cuba or somewhere else, because Russia can probably prevent him from leaking further information and will probably keep a close watch over him, whereas if he goes to some third country at this point, who knows what will happen.
Well, the questions, though, have been raised. I've talked to a couple of people in Moscow, Time magazine correspondent there, who had talked to a lot of top intelligence officials, both on and off the record, and also the defense and intelligence correspondent at Novaya Gazeta, which is the only non-Putin-controlled newspaper left in Russia, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer. And they both have indicated that the FSB and the SVR, the successor to the KGB, it's their job to get this information that Snowden has with him. That's just what they do. And also, he may not necessarily be in control of certainly the hardware, the computers and stuff that he allegedly traveled with, and the thumb drives, because when you go to an airport, particularly this part of the airport that the FSB has a lot of control over, they would definitely be able to, you know, if they can make you take your shoes off here, they can certainly search your computers in Moscow. So that leads one to wonder about what happened to all this secret information and whether Putin is actually being kind of tweaking us a little bit, on the one hand saying how much he wants to cooperate with his American partners, and the other hand, secretly behind the scenes, the FSB and the SVR have been, you know, interrogating and debriefing this guy from day one. That's the rumor I hear.
Absolutely. We have to assume that. We have to assume that the Russian intelligence agencies have completely debriefed him, have examined anything he brought into the airport in terms of computers, technology, equipment, and will have got out of him anything that they can get out of him in terms of information. So we should just take that as given. Then at this point, he's not really of much further informational use to them, but he can create problems if he leaks more information and exacerbates relations with the U.S. when they don't want relations to be particularly bad. But we have to assume he's been debriefed. Now, what exactly he knew that the FSB, SVR didn't already know is another question. The sorts of revelations that he's made, which have resonated in the U.S., have really resonated because they've been about the way the NSA was doing things that were on the borderline of legality, or about statements made by people at the top of the NSA, which at this point don't appear to be completely factual. There haven't been so many revelations about details of the information monitoring systems that one wouldn't have assumed in any case. I'm sure the FSB knew or assumed that the NSA was basically monitoring all information that it could get hold of. So to be told that isn't really providing them with much greater insight than they already had. Now, maybe Snowden knows additional things which haven't been published in the West, or maybe I've missed something. But I'm not 100% sure that he had a lot of stuff that would be really a revelation to the very serious intelligence agencies of major powers.
Well, just in closing, then, Daniel Treisman, the White House spokesman Jay Carney said today, we are evaluating the utility of the summit, meaning the G20 summit in St. Petersburg in early September, after which President Obama is supposed to go to Moscow to meet with Putin. Now, there are other, of course, irritants apart from Snowden. There is the Magnitsky affair, who just was posthumously given a jail sentence, which is extraordinary and somewhat brutal in terms of its overkill. But there's also this looming possibility of some kind of consumer boycott against Russian products over Putin's anti-gay crackdown and possibly even a boycott of the Sochi Olympics. So what's your sense of that possibility in addition to the Magnitsky ban on a specific number of Russian officials who, of course, in the Magnitsky case, in short, was he was a whistleblower who ended up being punished for telling the truth, and the bad guys have gotten away with it. He died, possibly was killed in prison, and now they posthumously slapped a fine and a prison sentence on him, and the people that he blew the whistle on are all free as birds, except they can't travel because of the U.S. ban.
Right. Well, I don't think very much more is going to happen on the Magnitsky case. I may be wrong, but the U.S. has imposed its Magnitsky list. The Russians are upset about that, but we've sort of moved on from there. But one other thing that could come up before the summit is what happens in the Moscow mayor's election race. Now, Alexei Navalny, leading opponent of Putin and leader of street protests and anti-corruption blogger, was recently convicted of a case of embezzlement and sentenced to 5 years in prison in a labor camp. Now, his sentence, he was allowed to get out while his sentence is being appealed, and meanwhile he's running for mayor of Moscow. Now, presumably the Kremlin thinks that he's going to fail. He's not going to get more than about 15% of the votes, and it'll legitimize the election of the re-election of the current mayor, who's a Kremlin appointee. But if things get out of hand and the campaign really takes off, all that is going to be occurring just at the time of the G20 summit in St. Petersburg. So in Moscow, the election is going to be September 8th. The summit is, if I remember right, 5th, 6th, or 7th of September. So if they crack down, if things seem to be slipping out of control and something unexpected happens in the Moscow race, then that could also affect attitudes of Western leaders about participation in the summit. In any case, it's going to be a theme which will be in the background as they meet there. Sochi's a little further away. And there, I think there's a very real possibility that the LGBT community is going to press for some sort of boycott or as you say, consumer boycott against Russia to protest the really homophobic laws that have been passed recently. But that's 2014, so we have a little longer to wait till we see how that plays out.
Well, Daniel Treisman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Daniel Treisman, who's a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia. He's the author of two previously acclaimed books on Russia, the latest of which is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with China expert Orval Schell about his new book, Wealth and Power.
Back in the USSR.